The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright, the power to create a happier, healthier life drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California, and I'm so glad you could be with me. Tonight we have a very, very special guest that you may remember from the incredible movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? Dr. Joe Dispenza is with us tonight, and he is not only an expert on the brain as a neuroscientist, but he is the author of this incredible new book called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. It is a brilliant, brilliant book, and it's all about creating a different reality and understanding how the brain works. You're not going to want to miss out on this incredible show tonight, so I want you to sit back, relax, tune in as we listen to our sponsors on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. We'll be right back. I am thrilled to announce our presenters on our upcoming Cruise of a Lifetime on December 13th to the Mayan Ruins. The phenomenal Lee Harris is flying in from the UK to give us channeled information right in Tulum. And shaman Stefan Will, flying in from Spain, will be doing incredible meditations and emotional clearing work. We have one of the most dynamic speakers and self-development experts, Constance Arnold, coming in to help us release the past. And hugely popular astrologer Gene Wiley flying in as well, telling us what the stars mean in 2013. All designed to give you incredible insight and advice on how to create the best in 2013. So come aboard our high-energy trip. Time is of the essence, so sign up today to get the best rates, best cabins, and best cabin mates. Go to lawofattractioncruise.com.
You're listening to Law of Attraction Radio Network, enhancing the well-being of millions of listeners worldwide. LOARadionetwork.com is heard through 25 different internet radio stations, as well as iTunes Radio, Stitcher.com, and our mobile apps. The Law of Attraction Radio Network, your trusted source of daily inspiration at LOARadionetwork.com.
Okay, we are back. So many exciting things happening on this network. Next week, we are starting a new Law of Attraction store in which we are bringing you products, services, and events that we wholeheartedly recommend. Yep, we're recommending the best of the best and anything that has to do with the Law of Attraction. So I want you to check back frequently as we continually add more products for you to consider. And by the way, there's something else that's very exciting about this store. You will receive 25% off of any product that is in our store when you sign up for our annual pass into the LOA 25 Club. You just pay one low annual fee that entitles you to 25% off of every purchase you make for an entire year. Yep, we're in the process of setting it up, but I can promise you we will be cheaper than Amazon or any other place on the internet. So sign up for our LOA Club starting next week. Okay, I'm giving you fair warning. The prices for the cruise are increasing after September 15th. We have several people looking for cabin mates, and we have several cabins left in our inventory. Come on, join us for the cruise of a lifetime. I am so excited about this on the Jewel of the Seas. We have some really incredible miracles surrounding this cruise already happening. So what are you waiting for? Sign up today. I am so anxious to visit Tulum, the ancient village of the Mayan ruins. So much fun. So I hope that you can come along with us and experience the cruise of a lifetime. I wanted to talk about one more thing, and it's rather deep, so please try to follow along. Did you know that there's no such thing as matter? Well, here's what Max Planck, physicist who originated quantum theory, said about it. All matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force which brings the particle of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system of the atom together. We must assume behind this force is the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter. Let's go a step further here. Matter means that this desk, this microphone that I'm talking on, you and I are solid. But yet Einstein said that everything solid is only a mirage. Now look at the evidence. If you amplify the frequency of the matter, it will change. Take, for example, a wine glass. A high pitch frequency will cause the glass to move and change and even liquefy its structure right before it breaks. So what dominates here? Matter or sound frequency? Stay with me on this. It's getting really interesting. Everything of substance owes its existence to sound. Sound is what holds everything together. Sound is the basis of form and shape. The inside of an atom is empty energy, and the controlling factor of that energy is sound frequency. Look at it this way. If you put sand on the ground and turn the volume up on the radio, and you'll notice that the sand starts dancing, vibrating. And when you put crystal underneath that sand and deliver a sound frequency to it, you'll notice that the sand starts forming a complex and precise pattern of design through circles. Change the sound frequency, and the pattern changes to reflect another beautiful design, all symmetrically shaped. Science has proven that sound frequency is what keeps our planets and our solar system rotating. And the frequency is such that we are unable to hear it with our own ears. But it's there because that is the force that keeps everything in sync, just like the sand with the crystal behind it makes the design of sacred geometry. So let's go back to matter for a second. Quantum physics has revealed that ancient cultures knew that matter does not exist. Proof of this is through mathematics, magnetism, healing, and the knowledge of unseen forces, which is also known as spirituality. The ancients and our science today fully acknowledge that the substance of the universe is not matter, but consciousness. Quantum physics has shown that there is no such thing as time or space. It is just an illusion. Consciousness shapes our reality, just as the music on the radio is the result of frequency. Understanding all that, let's move on to what makes us tick. Emotions. Now, did you know that there are only two emotions in the world? That's right, only two. Two emotions that are the root of all other emotions, and they are love and fear. If you put these emotions on a sound graph, let's examine what you'll see. With fear, you'll see that there are long flowing lines going slowly up and down, missing many components in the center, not going too high, just staying within the boundaries. Compare that to the emotion of love. You'll see that the emotions of love are fast, going up and down dramatically, not missing any of the center components. Okay, so fear lingers in slow and measured movements, and love is fast, tall, encompassing all. This shows us why we get so often stuck in our fear, in our pain, in our lower emotions. Interesting, huh? Now, do you see what is happening on our planet right now? the fear is dominating and there is less and less movement of love. Greg Braden said that there are 64 possible codes of amino acid in our body, and they're made up from the four elements. Out of the 64 possible codes, did you realize that there are only 20 of these codes that are activated in our body? The switch to turn on and off these amino acids are, in fact, our emotions. A person living in the pattern of fear are activating less amino acids than those that are flowing within the love vibration. This is a hard link to emotions and genetics. DNA is taking in the spiritual energy of that love frequency and then sending it out in manifestation. Your reality affects you and only you. As a matter of fact, you are the sole creator of your reality. Hence, we have the law of attraction. The frequency of your emotions can cause disharmony, allowing the stress and the fear to manifest in illness in your life. The frequency of emotions can create perfect health and incredible happiness and joy when you're flowing through the love emotion. Recognizing right now that the planet is a bit stuck in the lower emotions of fear, Law of Attraction Radio Network has decided to have a high frequency, high energy healing hour every day of the week at 6 p.m. Pacific and again at 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. We have invited energy healers from all over the world to participate in transmitting high-frequency energy to all who listen. Because there is no such thing as time and space, this energy will not only stay on the recording, but will, in fact, build and build every time a listener hears and raises their vibration to love. As you can imagine, this is a pretty powerful sound frequency going on. And it's our intention to shift the planet and all its inhabitants away from fear and into love, in which to create a world of peace and abundance. The response for the call of energy healers has been incredible. Their willingness to help raise your vibration to love just brings tears to my eyes. They are participating with their groups in India, Sweden, Norway, Europe, Spain, Australia, Canada, the UK, and of course, the US. So if you're an energy healer and wish to help us energize this very important high frequency healing hour, please send me an email at jules@loaradionetwork.com. Now, what does this mean for our listeners? Well, if you tune in at either 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, you will find yourself realizing that the issues from your past will seem insignificant, that your fear will be lessened, and you will realize the magnificence of your very being right here and right now on this planet. You'll be able to stay within this frequency of love more often and be able to release the fear that dominates all cells. You will notice an increase of happiness in your life. This is exactly where you need to be to create and ripple out the healing love and peace to everyone you meet. Your heart opens and your life is transformed. Starting on August 31st, the day of the new blue moon, will be the start of our musical hour that transmit high frequency energy to all who listen. And you simply need to be open and receptive to all the energy being transmitted to you and allow your heart to open. One last thing. Since music transcends language, please tell your friends, family, and those in need of a dose of love, no matter where they are in the world, to tune in. The only place you can hear this is by going to loaradionetwork.com. You cannot access this through iTunes or Stitcher. You must tune in and listen. Send everyone you know the opportunity to listen in to this beautiful heavenly music as they allow their heart to open. Now, after you listen, I hope that you and others will share what happened during the hour for you on our blog. Just make a comment and tell us what you felt. And because of you, and because of all these beautiful, beautiful energy healers from around the world, we will be shifting the planet. Now, let's get on with tonight's show because I am so excited to meet this legend, Dr. Joe Dispenza. I want to make sure I get everything right on this, so I'm going to read his bio. He is fascinating and so accomplished, so that you're going to understand fully that this guy, Dr. Joe, really knows what he's talking about. Dr. Joe Dispenza, D.C., is a neuroscientist, lecturer, and author, and is an expert on the brain, mind, and human potential. He spent decades studying the human mind, how it works and stores information, and why it perpetuates the same behavioral patterns over and over. He draws on both scientific and universal principles to deliver practical tools and techniques that empower people to truly change from the inside out and so change the results of their lives. He was featured in the movie What the Bleep Do We Know and the new film People vs. the State of Illusion coming to a theater near you. Dr. Joe has written two best-selling books, Evolve Your Brain, The Science of Changing Your Mind, and just published Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, How to Lose Your Mind and Create a New One, which became, by the way, number one best-selling book in self-help and personal development on Amazon.com the week it came out. So I am so delighted, and I hope you'll join me in welcoming Dr. Joe Dispenza. Welcome, Dr. Joe, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I am so honored to meet you, sir.
Nice to meet you also, Jules.
You have, of course, been in the movie What the Bleep, and I remember you so well, as I'm sure the rest of the listening audience. But you are also a best-selling author, and you have a brand new book called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. Well, I've read this book, and it is phenomenal, but it's like a textbook because you have all of these graphs and everything that talk about the brain, and it's so informative. So why did you decide to go into such detail? Why is it necessary for us to understand what's going on in our brain?
Well, I think that science has become the contemporary language of mysticism. I think science is a way to describe the supernatural now. If we start talking about religious texts or tradition or culture, we start excluding individuals. And the research now that's being done about empowering individuals, the new science of neuroplasticity and the concept of epigenetics and the quantum model of reality really is a way to empower people to understand what's possible. But it's not only is this a time in history that people want to know, I think more importantly, people want to know how. So when you begin to understand how things work and the reasons for the way your brain functions, you're more prone to apply them in your life and see measurable changes. And when you see those measurable changes, you're more apt to repeat the process again and again.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. And you go into details about the health of the mind. I thought that was fascinating because you're giving details of how the brain can rejuvenate, right? And
absolutely,
how it can go into being diseased.
Absolutely. I mean, we're either in a state of growth and repair, or we're in a state of emergency, or we're in a state of breakdown. And for most people, the majority of people in this culture live their lives reacting or responding to the environment. So the environment, the external world, is controlling, for the most part, how we think and feel. And if the environment is dominating our thoughts and our feelings, then we're victims to the external world. And if we believe that our thoughts have anything to do with our destiny, then as long as we react to everything familiar in our life, we keep creating more of the same in our life. So what we're talking about in the book Breaking the Habit is how to actually change the way we think and feel inside of us to produce some result outside of us. So going from the Newtonian model of reality, where people are living and reacting to the external world and being angry and frustrated and hateful and judgmental and envious and jealous and fearful and insecure and anxious and suffering and painful and hopeless, those are primarily the emotions that are driven by the hormones of stress, which are an emergency state. Now, the short term is that all organisms can handle short-term stress, but no organism in nature is designed for long-term stress. And it's those hormones of stress that keep knocking the brain and body out of balance, which begins to create disease. So the result of that over time is that we keep doing the same things, thinking the same thoughts, reacting emotionally in the same way, and really expecting something different to show up in our life. The new model says that we can literally shut out the environment and change our inner state and create a level of coherence, a level of balance in the brain and body that is now greater than the environment. And we can change the brain and body to look like the event has physically already occurred. Now, it's no longer cause and effect, it's now causing an effect. And once people understand that distinction, then there's flourishing. Then there's rejuvenation, then there's expansion, then there's health, then there's a reorganization of balance in the brain and body, and we have all the biological machinery to do this.
We do, but you describe that it's a multi-process. It's just not going into meditation and thinking about it. There's a whole bunch of other things to do. That's what I thought was so fascinating about your book.
Well, I like to demystify meditation. I mean, the word meditation, the actual translation, the symbolic interpretation of the word meditation literally means to become familiar with. That's what the word means. So the process of change, Jules, requires unlearning and relearning. It requires breaking the habit of the old self and reinventing a new self. It requires what we call in neuroscience pruning synaptic connections, just like you prune a fruit tree, and sprouting and growing new connections. It requires unmemorizing emotions that we have stored in our body, and then reconditioning the body to a new mind or a new emotion. It's literally going from the past to the future. So if we look at the word meditation, it makes total sense then, because in order for us to change, we have to become familiar with our unconscious thoughts. We got to begin to pay attention or notice our unconscious habits and behaviors. And we have to be able to observe those emotions that keep bringing us to a lower denominator. And if we keep observing them by just repetition, we begin to objectify our subjective mind. In other words, if we're looking at our thoughts, our behaviors, and emotions, we're no longer those programs, but we're the consciousness observing them. So the process then, meditation, means you got to know thyself. You have to become aware of those unconscious states of mind and body. Now, the word meditation in terms of flourishing and pruning, sprouting new connections, is the same thing, because as you begin to think in new ways, as you begin to contemplate new ways of being, as you begin to speculate new behaviors, you can literally change your brain to look like the experience has happened. In other words, you're installing the neurological circuitry ahead of the actual event. So now you have the hardware in there to use when you get up in your waking life. So if you keep reminding yourself who you no longer want to be until you become familiar with it, and then you keep reminding yourself who you do want to be. As you remind yourself who you no longer want to be, nerve cells that no longer fire together no longer wire together. You biologically prune away the old self. And as you begin to fire and wire a new level of mind, as you do that, in time, you install that circuitry, and that becomes the very platform of your destiny. And if you keep repeating it, you'll become familiar with those new thoughts, those new behaviors, and those new emotional states, and that leads you to a new destiny. Because the premise of the book says this: your personality creates your personal reality. And your personality is made up of how you think, how you act, and how you feel. So it makes sense then that if you wanted to create a new personal reality, a new life, that you would have to change the thoughts that you think, the choices or behaviors that you demonstrate, and the emotions that you live by. Now, I think that most people try to create a new personal reality as the same personality, and that really doesn't work.
Right, right. That makes so much sense. So let's break it down a little bit. Say, at the beginning of the year, I made a resolution to stop being so judgmental, because I found that when I'm judgmental, people are judging me. So is that what you mean about understanding what's going on in you so you can rewire that to stop being so judgmental?
Okay, well, that's a great place to start. I mean, but the psychological model says that by the time we're 35 years old, our personality is a finite set, complete set of memorized behaviors, emotional reactions, habits, and attitudes that run like a computer program subconsciously.
Oh.
So that means then that by the time we're 35 years old, we've conditioned the body to become the mind. We've done something so many times that the body knows as well as the brain. So if the body is the subconscious mind because we've trained it or conditioned it to be that way, then most people are trying to change a state of mind, say judgment, with 5% of their conscious mind, and yet they've memorized so many thoughts, so many behaviors, so many emotions that exist subconsciously. So they start out with good intentions, but they return back to the same self because they never got into the operating system of those subconscious programs where they reside. However, if you said to yourself, what are the thoughts that I think that happen in my mind when I'm judgmental? What are those exact thoughts? And you wrote them down and you said, oh, I think this. I hear this voice in my head that says this. I notice that I feel this way. And you begin to notice how you think, how you act, and how you feel. And you wrote down those states of mind and body. And you memorized that list and began to become familiar with the old self to such a degree that no thought, no behavior or no emotion would slip by your awareness that you did not want to experience. You became conscious of those states. And we could say then that in time, as you begin to remove yourself from those programs, you're no longer the program. Now, the first step requires this unlearning process because it's like someone trying to think positively, but they've been feeling negative for the last 25 years. So that's mind and body in opposition. A person says they want wealth in their life, but they feel poor. That's mind and body in opposition. Or they pray for a new life, but they feel guilty. That's mind and body in opposition. We have to recondition the body to a new mind. So after we begin to become familiar with the old self, that's an unconscious set of programs, the more familiar with it we are, the less likelihood of us returning back to that old self. Now, and when we decide what thoughts we do want to think, and we begin to write those down, how would a non-judgmental person think? Well, they probably would just love the person and allow them, be present with them. How would they behave? And you begin to list those. How would they feel? And you begin to move into those states of mind and body every day. Now, not only are you changing the circuits in your brain, but you are now emotionally conditioning your body to become familiar with that new state of being, because when mind and body are working together, or when our thoughts and feelings are aligned, we are in a state of being. And that state of being then allows us to memorize an internal order that nothing in our external environment can move us from it. Now, that's a sign of mastering something.
Wow, that is beautiful. I fully understand that.
Oh, good.
Fully. I mean, that just makes so much sense. But so how long does it take usually to get that neurons built? Is it true it's 28 days, 30 days, or is it longer? It just depends on how deep you go within.
Well, I don't think that there's any particular time frame that allows us to change. I mean, it depends on the emotional addictions we have. It depends on how relaxed we are when we do it, how long we do it for, if we're doing it properly. There's too many variables to say what it takes to change. I think that I've seen people change overnight, and I've seen people change, and it takes them a year. So the hardest part of all of this, really, is simply making the time to do it.
Uh-huh.
That's it. I mean, making time for our precious selves to retreat from our familiar external life that regulates a set of thoughts and behaviors to reaffirm our identity, and begin to think and feel in new ways. And then try it out. If I can maintain this modified state of being my entire day, then something different should show up in my life. That's the law. And if I return back to my old self somewhere during the day, then let me begin to investigate what caused me to react in this, in a particular way, and let me begin to think about new ways of being so that when the experience comes, I modify my reactions so that I'm moving away from my present life and I'm walking into a new life. So I don't think there's a time frame. I think that it's a really funny concept, but when most people are changing, they're really pretty much resigned to the process of change. So the body is the best mind reader in the world. It's, if you were sitting there and I said to you, Jules, you know, 9 out of 10 times I want you to fake standing up, but one time I want you to actually stand up. Well, the 9 times you don't decide to stand up, you have no physiological change in your body. The moment you decide to stand up, actually, before you even make the conscious decision to stand up, your body already, as a precognitive organism, already is aware that you've made that decision ahead of the actual decision. Now, how does that work in the process of change? Well, most people in the process of change, they're sitting on the couch, they have the television on, they have their computer to their right, they have their smartphone to their left, they have the remote control in their hand, and they're flipping through the channels and they say, you know, I think I'm going to change tomorrow. And so the body already is so precognitive, it doesn't get any movement out of its resting state. So the body gets the information and the body says, she's not going to change. Are you kidding me? We already know that she's going to go back to the same person. But if you say, I don't care how long it takes me. I don't care. That's time. I don't care what's going on in my life, environment. I don't care how I feel, body. I'm going to do this. And you make the decision with firm intention. And that decision is an experience that begins to store itself in long-term memory. You're beginning to rewrite the programs in that moment, and the body is the unconscious mind. The servant, the animal, gets a very strong signal, and it says, uh-oh, she's actually serious this time. Now, most people wait for crisis or trauma or disease or diagnosis or loss to get about changing.
Right.
Because we have to reach our lowest denominator. We have the ego has to be bruised to such a degree that we can't think the same way any longer. We can't act the same way. We can't feel the same. Personality falls apart, and that's when people finally go, okay, now I'm fractured to such an extent, I better think about who I do want to be. Now, my message is, why wait? You know, that we can learn and change in a state of pain and suffering, or we can learn and change in a state of joy and inspiration. And so the hardest part of this is literally cultivating a new mind and new body every day to begin to take the time out of our lives to begin to ask some profound questions like, what is the greatest expression of myself that I can be today? What do I love about myself that I want to enrich? What no longer serves me that isn't loving to me? What behaviors or choices am I making that are undermining my possibilities? And just asking some of those simple questions will begin to cause the brain to work in new and different ways. And whenever you make the brain work differently, you're changing your mind, because mind is the brain in action. So if we can remind ourselves every day we produce the same level of mind, we're headed for a new life.
You're right. Oh, my goodness. Excuse me. I can see that that would work perfectly with the weight loss, getting that determination, having that food in front of you. Boy, that is you've got to get that determination to carry it through, and that starts everything flowing.
Well, if you look at the concept of weight loss, and, you know, I've had the privilege a few times in speaking to organizations where people are interested in a certain level of health or a certain change in their physical body, you know, forget about the weight. I mean, what is the reason that you're overeating to make, what is the feeling you're trying to make go away? Now, when you start addressing that feeling, because that feeling has become so familiar to you that you think that's who you are, but feelings and emotions are the end product of past experiences. So that's not who you are. That's just a memory from the past that's literally chemically residing. It's a residue from a past experience. So a person may feel unworthy. A person may have self-doubt. A person may be insecure. And so that feeling doesn't go away very easily, but they can eat something or sweets or whatever, and they feel good. And the moment they feel differently inside of them, they pay attention to whatever caused it outside of them. And that event in and of itself is called a memory. So as the person begins to change that level of unworthiness or self-doubt or insecurity, and they begin to unmemorize those emotions, then it makes total sense that if you're no longer feeling unworthy, or if you're no longer doubting yourself, or you're no longer feeling uncertain or insecure, then there's no reason to make that feeling go away. And now you're actually making choices that reaffirm a new state of being. So it's important also to look at those emotional states, because that's what's driving the behaviors to overconsume in the first place.
So you're talking about not only mindfulness, but you're talking about mindfulness with your emotions. You have to really get into yourself and really monitor what you're feeling at all times, because we're worth it.
Absolutely. And you know, mindfulness, or what is in neuroscience called metacognition. And what that word means is simply that we can pay attention to how we think. We can think about how we think. We can notice how we act, and we can become aware of how we feel. And because we have such a large frontal lobe, it allows us to look at who we're being so that we can modify our behaviors in moments, do something differently, make a different choice, create a new experience, choose a new emotion, so that we can literally do a better job in life. So here we go, because by the time we're 35 years old, we've hardwired a set of thoughts. We've hardwired a set of behaviors. We've memorized a set of emotions in our bodies that we think is who we really are, but we're not the record of the past. We are, in fact, a map to the future. And that means that we have to change the brain and body ahead of our environment to look like the experiences already happened.
Okay, so after age 35, you would think if you're mindful, you could change faster. I mean, I felt a great growth between the age of 35 to my current age, which is way over 35.
this is important, because in the book I talk about this concept called the gap. You know, by the time we're 35 or 45 years old, we pretty much can predict the feeling of every single experience we have in our life. We know what success is. We know what relationships and sexuality and sexual identity is. We know success and failure, pain and suffering, guilt, shame. We pretty much mastered all of those limited states. And so after a period of time, we can look at a future event and we can determine how it's going to feel. And if we don't like how it's going to feel, we'll avoid it. So how can the unknown ever show up in our life if we're predicting how an event is going to feel? Because by very nature, that feeling then is a record of the past, and we're literally keep recreating or choosing the same experience in our life. Now, we reach a point in our life where all of a sudden, you know, we've experienced all of these things and nothing's really making that feeling go away that we've become familiar with, that's our identity, you know. And so this is the midlife crisis, because now the person is saying, I don't understand love. I don't know what's important to me any longer. I don't want to do these things. I don't want to keep this facade, this identity, this false ideal going. You know, we create this gap, and this is how we appear to the world, and this is how we really, really feel inside of us. This is, you know, what we project and we want everybody to believe we are, but what's going on hidden inside of us is emptiness or insecurity or pain. And so first 35 years of our life, we can keep this identity going by identifying with the environment. We can go to school, we can make friends, we can move to different places, we can, you know, get education, we can buy cars, we can make new friends and get married and get divorced, we can buy homes, we can buy pets. And all of that is to really keep this identity going, identifying with the external world. And as we're putting all our attention on the external environment, we don't really have to feel this feeling because we're too distracted by the external world. Well, by 35 or 45, all of a sudden, this feeling starts to creep up a little bit more. And certain people start to look at this feeling and they start to say, I don't love you because I don't even know what love is. What is God? What is our meaning in life? Why am I doing all of this? Who am I doing it for? And they start looking down at this feeling, and this is the midlife crisis. This is where people all of a sudden start to break their emotional contracts and emotional bonds with everybody in their life, and they start telling the truth. And everybody up here who's using them for their own emotional addictions to reaffirm their identity all of a sudden thinks that this person is losing their mind. And in effect, they are losing their mind. And what they're really saying is that I don't want to keep all of this going because this is like spinning plates. And this is where people all of a sudden start to fall down to this point. Now, some people authentically reach that emotional state and they begin to look at who they've been and they begin to make changes. Other people, they go to the doctor gives them Prozac, and boom, they return back to the same person, reaffirming their same identity. Other people, they try to re-identify with their environment. They buy the sports car, they mm-hmm. buy the boats, they join the new social club, they go on vacation. They try to have new relationships. All of that is to try to create a novelty or a newness to really make this feeling go away. But when the novelty wears off, here comes this feeling again. And this gap is defined by the emotions that we've memorized from past experiences that we've become addicted to. Now, true change doesn't happen by trying to create a new identity outside of us. True change happens when we begin to unmemorize those emotions and close the gap between how we appear and who we are. Now, when how we appear is who we are and we have that level of transparency, okay. Every time we unmemorize an emotion, that emotion is releasing energy. And that energy now is available energy that people get to use to create a new destiny with. In other words, when the body is freed from the chains of those emotional addictions, the body is liberated from that emotional constraint of believing that it's living in the past. The moment that happens, there's energy that goes from the body into the field. And that energy now is now energy to create a new destiny with. And that's when people begin to make measurable changes.
Wow, that's powerful. Wow. Terrific. I love it. I love it. Now, let's talk about some of your workshops, because I know you have a bunch coming up. But in your workshops, do you go through all this? Do you help people to release or to get to that place where they can get this new energy?
Absolutely. I mean, after I was in What the Bleep and after I wrote my first book, I think one of the common feedback responses that we got was, well, really great information. Yeah, we understand the science and now we know it's possible, but can you tell us how to do it? You know, how do we do this? And so we started teaching these workshops pretty much around the world with the intention of showing people how to actually apply these things and how to make those changes. And so the workshops are designed specifically to give people the necessary information and then give them the tools to begin to apply it to their life. And so we've had amazing successes with a lot of people in terms of changing their health, creating the things they want in their life, and you know, making some really substantial changes for themselves.
Yeah, I read in the book that you even had a person won a lottery ticket.
Yes, yeah, that was a pretty amazing experience, and that's, we've had a few other people win the lottery too, which is, you know, if that's where your intention is, that's great. But we've also had a lot of people that were diagnosed with pretty serious health conditions, and when they began to understand that the same emotional state keeps signaling the same gene in the same way, and that the body is the unconscious mind, and it doesn't know the difference between an experience in your life that produces an emotion and an emotion that you fabricate by thought alone to So the body, it believes it's in the same experience. And by living by long years of resentment or long years of judgment or long years of rage or anger or fear, the body actually believes it's in the same conditional state 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And it's that redundancy that begins to push the genetic button that creates disease. When people begin to understand that when they can overcome those states and then recondition the body to a new state of mind, that in time we've seen diseases like MS and cancer and lupus and Hashimoto's syndrome and chronic pain and depression, insomnia, just literally change because the body is no longer believing that it's in the same environmental conditions. So we're pretty pleased to see that that there are really great things happening because of this. And so when we started getting the feedback that we were getting with all of these breakthroughs, it was a really strong and monumental moment in my career because I understood now that I was actually making a difference, making a substantial difference. And I think I'm the happiest and the most overjoyed when I'm contributing, and people are actually doing it. So it's been wonderful.
Wow. Your workshops, I've got to go to one. Tell me about the meditation. Is meditation all about blanking out your mind, pausing your mind, or are we, give me that detail.
Well, we can talk about meditation with some of the latest technology. And when you and I are in a conversation like this and we're chatting, our brainwave patterns are in a state of wakefulness. In other words, as you and I are discussing this information, if we were to look at an electroencephalographic reading of our brains would be in what's called a beta state. In other words, our neocortex would be firing information, and it would be trying to integrate all the information that we're talking about, everything in the external world, with what's going on inside of us. So when we're functioning in beta, the outer world is more real than the inner world. Now, that's important for us because we function in three dimensions or four dimensions, and we have to keep our attention on the outer world. Now, when we react to things in our life, stressful situations in our life, our brain goes from what's called a low level of beta, that we're just hanging out and relaxing and talking, to a mid-range beta, which is a little bit more vigilant, all the way to a high-range beta where you're overly analytical, you're overly focused, your brain is in a very incoherent state, you're in emergency mode, and no new information can enter into your nervous system that isn't equal to the emotion that you're experiencing. So in that state, you don't want to learn. You don't want to grow. You don't want to have ideas or create long-term building projects because you're in emergency. And in emergency, you're not interested in growth and repair. You're interested in the immediate moment and the emergency that's related to it. Now, when you're in that state, you're pretty much in an analytical mode of thinking. You're always evaluating the next moment based on the past moment. You're thinking in polarity, good and bad, success and failure, right and wrong, positive and negative. Because the brain is divided in half, we're constantly doing that. When you close your eyes and you begin to eliminate the external environment, and your brain is no longer processing anything visually, 80% of our input comes from our sight, our spatial orientation. The moment we begin to eliminate that the external environment, we play soft music in the background and we're not hearing ambient sounds, the neocortex isn't thinking or putting its attention on the external world any longer, and it begins to slow down its processing. It becomes less analytical. And the moment that happens, we move into what's called an alpha state. And in alpha, according to the research, the inner world is more real than the outer world. In other words, what you're thinking about or dreaming about seems to be more real than the external environment. Now, this is an important place to be because this is when you begin to move from the conscious mind through the analytical mind into the operating system of the subconscious where all those habits and behaviors and programs exist. Now, when we move into this alpha state, we have periods where we lose track of time and space. Because as the frontal lobe begins to process new information and you're attending to one idea or one concept, it doesn't want to be distracted by all the extraneous stimulation. So it acts like a volume control. and it begins to lower the volume in the circuits of the rest of your brain that are connected to the environment, that are connected to your body, that are connected to time. And if there's no brain activity in those areas of different regions of your brain to process your body, environment, and time, then you are no body. You are no thing. You are no time. Now, this state of dissociation, this moment where you become nothing, is the moment you are becoming pure consciousness. And when you're living in those emergency states, you're over-focused on your body. You're over-focused on your external environment, and you're obsessing about time. And you begin to define reality with your senses. We become materialists. We begin to focus on the very small portion of the atom instead of on the possibilities of the atom. Now, if an atom is 99.99999% nothing, possibility, and 0.00001% particle or physical material, then when we're living in emergency or by the hormones of stress, we're focusing on the particle and we're missing the waves of possibility. When we move into this elegant state of creation, when we become no body, no thing, no time, and we have all the machinery to do this, that moment where you are focusing on nothing, you forget about yourself, you forget about your problems, you forget about your relationships, your kids, your dogs, your husband, your wife, your problems, your what you do for a living, you're no longer processing that same level of mind that keeps your reality the same. That's the moment you move into the quantum field. So you can't enter the quantum field as a somebody. You have to enter as a nobody. You have to enter as pure consciousness. Now, when you enter in this state of pure consciousness, that's the moment we have dominion over the body. That's when we can begin to change something in our environment. That's when we can alter time in some way. And so because we have all this neurological machinery to do it, it means then that we clear the slate of living in the past, becoming completely present in the moment. Now, most people, when they hit this point, they think, I arrived at this place, and because there's an elevated emotion that comes with it. And that elevated emotion that begins to come up with it is that come up means that we're no longer thinking certain thoughts that make certain feelings, and those feelings drive the same thoughts that create the same feelings. And the majority of those feelings are derived in the hormones of stress, our survival centers, our sexuality, our digestion, our power and control and importance and fear and guilt. If you're no longer firing the same circuits in your brain that are making the same chemicals, you've really vacated biologically. That energy has to go somewhere, and it has to move out of those survival centers, and it moves up into the heart on the way to the brain, and you begin to fall in love with the present moment. You begin to feel free. You begin to feel like there's possibility. You feel like you're connected to something. You feel like you're seeing things that you never examined before. And this liberation of energy is literally the body moving from the past to the present. Now, most people stop there because it's such an amazing feeling. And what it is that a divine consciousness that we're connected to beginning to bleed out of us. It's beginning to move through us. It's beginning to consume us. And I call that the natural state of being. Now, once you get into that natural state of being and you feel so amazing, why not use those emotions and that energy to create a new destiny? So in our meditations, we don't just say move from the past emotions that have become part of our identity into nothing in the present. We say, now that you're in the present, we've just cleared the chalkboard. We've just wiped the board clean. Now you have available energy to create a new future with. So who do you want to be? And begin to design who you will be. Create a new personality, because a new personality is ultimately going to lead you to a new personal reality.
Wow. That is brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant. I've got to show everybody your book, because this is the book right here that you've got to get. Dr. Joe Dispenza. And your website is Dr. Joe Dispenza.
.com.
Good. Dr. Joe Dispenza. .com. You got to go. You got to check out his workshops, his seminars. Buy this book. You're going to love it, love it, love it. This has been a brilliant interview. Thank you so much, Dr. Joe.
Thank you, Jules.
I hope to have you back again. Are you writing another book?
Oh, my gosh. That's just like giving birth and asking if you're going to have another kid.
Women do it all the time.
I know. Well, here's the truth. I mean, the book went to number 9 on Amazon in less than a week and number 1 on the bestseller list there for motivational books. And, wow, our website crashed 5 times in 1 week, and we had all these technical problems. And I kept telling my staff, these are good problems to have. But we're just raising this baby right now, and I have a couple ideas for a new book somewhere down the line, but I'm certainly not going to rush into writing it. I'm happy to contribute this information right now, and let's see where it takes us.
Oh, it's beautiful information. Something, you know, this really fills in the gap for the law of attraction. So I thank you very much, and I do consider you a blessing to this world. So thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Jules, and keep up the great work.
Thank you. And to all my wonderful listeners, I'll see you back here next week. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for sharing your energy with us today. We will be back with another great show next week on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you would like to see a video of this broadcast, go to loaradionetwork.com/jules.html or send an email to jules@loaradionetwork.com.